Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, this is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Are you still out there? Yes. If a man cuts a podcast in Tallahassee and nobody downloads it, does it really exist? Let's put that theory to the test. I know you're out there, Tampa Bay. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, brought to you all year long, all off season long. By our friends at Bill Curry Ford, who reminds you to check out all the latest deals right now at BillCurryFord.com. I hope you took advantage of General Manager Sean Sullivan's deal for free season tickets before the deadline of the draft party last night. At any rate, Tampa Bay, here we are. We are squarely in the off season, and unfortunately, being squarely in the off season, you get to watch compelling hockey played all around this great continent, and if you could stomach it in the first place. And you wonder, what if? I mean, look at the other half of the bracket. It's not like we have any right to brag or to feel like it would have been an easy path for us, for we lost in four games to the freaking Columbus Blue Jackets. But when you see the rest of the NHL and the way the playoff bracket shakes out, and that all four division winners for the first time in history, all division winners have been unseated in the Stanley Cup playoffs after round one, you say, man, what a clean shot we'd have at this thing. It's about as fair a chance and easy a path as possible in these very difficult Stanley Cup playoffs, and we're golfing. I surely hope some of our players' up and down percentage, their scrambling percentage, is greater than our special teams percentage was this postseason. We can at least hope for that. It's a really difficult place to be. And I'll tell you, honestly speaking, as I look forward to next regular season, which starts in October, of course I'll be excited to watch my favorite team, or at least one of my two favorite teams in all of professional sports. But the regular season means nothing from here on out. I mean, honestly, until you have a new cycle and this core 4 or 5 years down the line, maybe more, they all retire. We go through some losing and a new core emerges and we develop through the draft and through some trades and we're on the rise again. Until that point, the regular season means nothing to Tampa. And so if I'm in the Tampa Bay Lightning ticket office, I worry about these things. I think most people will renew because winning is better than losing. And so even though we put a lower weight on what we see from October through April, it's still a very successful franchise, a first-rate franchise the way it's run, fan relations, the things they do in the community, how awesome of an owner we have, a commitment to winning and excellence, all of that stuff. You know, that I think people will buy for that reason, but it won't be because we're trying to set records or win 70 games in the regular season and back-to-back President's Trophies. All that matters now, and if I was making a decision at the margin, and I had, say, $5,000 to commit to the Tampa Bay Lightning, I'm saving my dollars until next postseason. Show and prove. If this year was cup or bust, and my God, did we bust, then next year is show and prove. Where do we go from here? Obviously, cap casualties will be suffered. We had positioned ourselves for this season to be one of two key seasons, this and next, where most of your core players can coexist under the salary cap constraints. But round one of the cuts come this offseason. The first place you got to look, obviously, because of the contracts that come off the books already, the defensive core. You've committed dollars to Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonough. They will be here. Mikhail Sergachev is still on an entry-level deal. He'll be graduating to his second contract soon, but he's going to be here. Eric Chernak was a revelation this season. And even though we had some uneven play from 81 in the post, I don't worry about him at all. I don't think this is a Jake Dotchin situation where he's going to go disappear in year two. So your top four in some form or fashion can be set, and you could split some of those guys up and maybe create at least a stalwart in the third pair moving forward. But, I mean, with Coburn and Strawman and Girardi coming off the books, along with Jan Ruta, you've got to fortify your depth, and you've got to find some new answers there. And you got to do it on the cheap, because of the salary realities, with a guy like Nikita Kucherov getting a hefty raise, and with Braden Point and his contract coming up, and he'll get somewhere between 6.5 and 8.5. Make no mistake here, guys, too. This is a really big opportunity for Julian Brisebois to either flex his muscle or leave us a little bit concerned. Steve Yzerman and the organization had done such a really good job of having our players take less money. Some of that has to do with the tax realities in the state of Florida. Some of that has to do with a commitment to winning. But Nikita Kucherov is playing for less than he's worth. Steven Stamkos is playing for less than he would get on the open market. Victor Hedman, much the same. Will Braden Point follow suit? That remains to be seen, especially with the restricted free agent market going crazy in other markets. Look at Toronto, for example. Okay, so when you remake your defensive core, what do you have to do with your forwards? You've got to make some tough choices. I think if you look at our depth lines, our third and fourth lines, Ryan Callahan is the obvious choice to come off the books in some form or fashion. If we can trade him to a team around the league that needs to reach the salary cap floor, the minimum you must spend, they've got to take on rich contracts in order to get to that salary cap minimum. I'm looking at you, Ottawa Senators. Then you do it. You unload him. But you may need to sweeten the deal with either a prospect or a pick to make that happen. And if you can't make that happen, then you've got to send him somewhere and take on a partial amount of his salary or outright buy him out. So Ryan Callahan is as good as gone, I think, next year. But then it gets a little more interesting, because you've got contracts like that of JT Miller's, which he has no trade clause through July of this year. But once July kicks in, he does have some no trade rights. Then you've got Tyler Johnson, who is also costing you around $5 million a year, five and change, and Alex Killorn, who's an expensive contract too, but they've got no trade rights. So you'd have to find a place where they would want to go. And obviously that decreases your leverage in that situation to get the maximum return. But salary relief is on the horizon here. It's not critical mass. For my money, it's going to be critical mass next offseason when Andrei Vasilevskiy is due a bleep ton of money. But before we even get to the players that I like and I don't like in terms of how they perform in the playoffs or what I think whether or not they're good for us in the long term, you've got to deal with the financial realities first. And so it's that time of year where you have to take off the emotional hat and you have to put on the accountant's green visor that you see when they had the old clicky things. Remember the mask? That's a good kind of caricature of the character. And so he pulls the lever back and forth. It's like, got on your T-bills and your blah, blah. That's our guy. That's what we need to be right now as fans. We look at the draft, we look at free agency, we look at the salary cap, and we say, how do we stay underneath here and keep the best pieces possible? It's a tough place to be, especially while good hockey is still being played. I mean, did you catch the crazy finish between San Jose and Vegas? The Golden Knights got screwed. That call on Pavelski is nuts. I doubt that's even 2 minutes, let alone five, but I also think it's kind of funny. Because, you know, Vegas has it way too easy, way too soon. So good. A little bit of humble pie for them. And who knows? San Jose is capable of winning this whole thing. But when I look around the league and I see that four division winners are ousted, it doesn't make me feel any better about the situation in Tampa, because guess what? We got bounced in the minimum amount of games we can play in the postseason. I'm sure this ownership group, this sales group, had counted on more than two freaking home games this postseason. I'm sure their budget included at least 5 to 7. You got two gates. Congratulations on that, guys. Ouch. When Washington goes down, when, I mean, one point, they won the division by a point. When Nashville goes down, and then when Calgary loses to the 8 seed, I picked Colorado to win that series. That doesn't surprise me. It doesn't make me feel any better about the fact that we look soft and we got outcoached. Period. But I'm not going to rehash that full of rage this week. I've had a week of therapy. I've been in intense therapy, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day to get over this ridiculous finish to our season. So we have to focus on what's next. And the casualties, as it relates to the salary cap, is what's next. If we can put all of that aside for just a moment, and I can evaluate the team on what I think we should do, what fits, what works, what doesn't, I'll be happy to do that. And that's exactly what we're going to do on the other side of this break on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. All right, back on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, brought to you all season long by Bill Curry Ford on the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network. Good job, Tampa Bay, last night. I know Joe, a.k.a. Lee, not too pleased with Devin White. I'm just fine with it, man. Take a look at what happened in Indianapolis last year, what Carolina brings to the table at the linebacking position. You can succeed with a bad ass in the middle of your linebacking core, especially when you're going to run a 3-4 and Bruce Arians says you're going to blitz your butt off. I think Devin White fits. But I digress. I just really don't want to talk about how angry I am with this Tampa Bay Lightning club. So I'm going to start with the guys that just failed us miserably this postseason. And the first person I'm going to start with is Ryan McDonagh. And as you well know, a couple of weeks ago, I said it is his mistake that was the first domino to fall. It was not the only mistake this postseason, certainly not the only one that Ryan McDonagh made, but he's not the only one at fault. It's just that was the first domino that really allowed for Columbus to go on a run that by the end of it, we never led again after being up 3-0 after the first period in game one of the series. And that is just flat embarrassing. And they know that, and I'm sure they feel that. But Ryan McDonagh wasn't just bad in game one. He might have been your worst defenseman in the series. And that's saying something because I think Dan Girardi played through cement blocks for feet. I think that's the condition he had, was cement blocks for feet. He was as slow as could be. I think if all things were equal, he would never have been out there so soon, given the injuries that he had suffered towards the end of the regular season. So I only look at Girardi's performance and say, good on you for fighting through what you had to give us the best you could. Ryan McDonagh is capable of a lot more. And while I was concerned about his performance last year in the postseason, and I cautioned against extending him without seeing a little bit more of how he looks in our system, Ryan McDonagh was also our first half MVP. It wasn't a forward. It wasn't a goalie. It was Ryan McDonagh. I thought he was the anchor of this defensive core, and to see him completely lose his confidence, everywhere he turned was wrong. And sometimes in the game of hockey, you're just snake bit. The bounces go against you. But at some point, if they keep going against you and you are the constant in the equation, you're doing something wrong. So I think he was just all out of whack and had no confidence whatsoever that he wasn't capable to step up for us when Victor Hedman was out. And truthfully speaking, to address Victor Hedman's situation, I would never accuse the organization of, you know, ignoring concussion protocol for somebody to play in the postseason. But I don't think that's mutually exclusive from the statement that he came back too soon. He might have been cleared, but he was not ready. The Victor Hedman we saw in game one of this series, that was made a fool of a couple of times as Columbus came back from a 3-0 deficit, was a shell of the player that we were used to seeing for the bulk of the regular season, especially, I think, after about January when his game rounded really into form and he was the Norris Trophy winner once again. I'm a little surprised, frankly, that he was named a Norris finalist this year. I don't think his 82-game resume was even close to worthy of it, but when he plays the best that he can play, there are few peers, if any peers, in the NHL, combining what he can do as a shutdown defenseman and an offensive threat. But Victor was not himself. And for us in that situation, that means that 27 has to step up. He did not, and there you go, defensively speaking. It was kind of a miracle that in game three we held Columbus down to two goals. I mean, we're in that game, and we have not given up a myriad of scoring chances like we did in game four. I thought we were just kind of defying the odds at that point, and game four would bear that out, that the way we were playing defensively and who we were missing on the core or in the core on defense, it finally gave way, and Columbus just barraged us, and we really couldn't get out in transition. Victor Hedman's absence was probably most felt in the transition, getting out of our zone, getting into our game in the neutral zone, and then getting the puck in deep or carrying it across the line. Certainly doesn't help on the power play, but when you get dominated the way we did 5-on-5, 77's absence has a lot to do with that. I just don't think we should get swept solely because Victor Hedman is out in the series, and so there are more goats in this series, and I don't mean the good kind like Tom Brady, our top forwards. I don't care that you showed up in game four. You were completely absent in games 1-3. Steven Stamkos is a player that this year turned into a true, complete hockey player in a way he never had before. Even though in 2017-2018, the stats say he was a pass-first forward, he always seemed like he was lacking in one area or the other. So he would go on a bit of a goal-scoring tear. Not crazy, because he only scored 20, whatever it was. But then he'd be an assist guy, and it was largely because of the greatness of Nikita Kucherov. That wasn't the case this past regular season. In 2018-2019, from about December on, you could argue that Stamkos was as good, if not maybe a shade better, than Nikita Kucherov. But none of that mattered in the postseason. He was completely shut down. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I'll get to that in a minute. Nikita Kucherov, mentally shut down again. Is this guy a quitter when things go bad? I don't believe so, but his reputation is at least in question in that regard. When we got shut down in the Washington series, he disappeared. When he got frustrated in this series, he took a ridiculous penalty, took himself out of the lineup by being suspended, said after the series, when asked, have you learned anything? He flatly answered, no. He's incredibly gifted, but I fear that Nikita Kucherov may be a bit of a front runner, and he's going to have to fight that next season. Whether or not you think that's fair, he's still going to have to prove it to the opposition. They're going to get up in his... What happens next time we get in the postseason? They're going to get in his face. They're going to check him tightly. He's going to have to fight through it and prove that he is the world-class player that the statistics say he is. He's going to have to get stronger-willed next postseason. Braden Point, an unbelievable goal. I mean, one of the great goals you'll ever see, with little to no space or time on the power play to tie game four at 3-apiece, but largely absent in this series as well. He's got to get better in faceoffs. So if you're looking for people to point the finger at in the series, of course your best players were not your best players. Victor Hedman was absent. Ryan McDonough was your worst defenseman, or maybe your second worst defenseman. Anton Stralman was not available, and I'd argue he's your third best defenseman if you're talking about playoff style hockey and wanting to get out in transition. Your top three forwards were garbage, and you really didn't get any scoring from the top six in general. So that's pretty rough now. Outside of Yanni Gord's goal in game one, I mean, and he was just Brantley newly minted top six, not good. And then on top of all that, while Andre Vasilevsky made a lot of saves, a lot of big saves, he wasn't up to par for him. I mean, that's a B-minus series at best for Andre Vasilevsky. He looked like he was guessing at times, and I don't know that was solely because of screens in front of him. So there's just a lot to chew on here. The whole team had a brain fart. And this is, again, I'll arrive at this point that I raised last week. You know, for John Cooper to bring it up and say something to the effect of, when you play meaningless games for a month, it's hard to just turn it on. I'm sorry, guys. If this was our first experience as a core group together, where we had never gone through the rigors of a playoff series before, I may be able to buy that excuse. But the more I thought about it, the more it felt like it insulted our intelligence as fans. And I'll never suffer a fool who thinks that they can just talk over you. And I'm not going to suffer John Cooper and that excuse. That's ridiculous, because the whole point of this 2018-2019 season was to finish the job. And this is a group that has been together for now four or five playoff runs, many of which have been deep runs, and they know what playoff hockey is all about. So you know what's coming. You know the beast. It's been defined for you. You got your manhood questioned last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you have minimum four chances to respond and raise your game to that level. If it was a one-off like the NCAA tournament or the NFL playoffs, again, maybe I would give some weight to that argument, but it just sounds like drivel and bullcrap to me. We've been there. We've done it. Do you really have to play meaningful games in April in order for you to be ready for the postseason in a best of seven? That's just kind of an asinine argument, and I think I'm probably going to be more mad about it next month than I am this month. So the hard part here moving forward is to stay engaged and passionate as we head into the offseason, because this team is built to win and win now. The window's not closed. And I don't know that the window is much more closed for next season than it is this past season. A lot of our pieces are in the prime of their career, and we were more physical this year than we have been in past seasons. But the hard part is, plainly speaking, no matter what we do in the 82 games of 2019-2020's regular season, it's not going to convince you of Jack. And you're completely right to feel that way. Show and prove next year is not about the regular season. It only begins in April. That's a hard place to be. I mean, frankly, when I do this, if I do this again next year, I hope they pick me up. But if I do this podcast again next year, what do you focus on? You focus on the development of your younger players. Hopefully a couple of our young defensemen get called up in the system, and then you're going to look at the new additions. I mean, Corey Conacher last year was signed to a two-year, two-way deal, or at least it was a two-year deal, and he's got a one-way option this upcoming season. I forget what it is, but it was on the cheap. The whole point was Corey Conacher signed a deal on the cheap because we knew we were going to face a salary crunch, and so therefore he was going to get a better-than-average chance to make our top 12 forwards next season at the NHL level. So you can accrue more towards your pension and obviously a higher game-to-game salary because you're playing at the highest level. But, I mean, I'm not going to be excited for the fact that Corey Conacher is in our bottom six. I don't know, outside of a major shakeup and multiple trades with like a JT Miller and Tyler Johnson. And I don't want to get rid of JT. I forgot to mention that. I know that I seem like a bit of a JT homer, but he seems like the right player for the postseason to me. He's the kind of guy who can go on the corners. He's physical enough to generate his own offense. Does he give away the puck a little bit more than I like? Sure. But there's a guy who's got a wicked shot. He scores greasy goals. Honestly, I think he should have been on the first power play for more than he was this season. He's just a more gifted offensive player than Andre Palat. It's not to say that Palat's not, of value. Of course he is. I think he's of value to shut down the opposition. But we just have a bit of a mess on our hands here, and I don't know that anything we do in the regular season is going to solve that. And one more problem before we get a sign off for this week. I've got one more of these to do next week, and we'll see if there's any news and notes in the NHL that helps shape what this offseason is going to look like for Tampa. But one other thing that drives me nuts. I know I said on the eve of the playoffs in the podcast that Monday that I was okay with the line combinations, and I was at the time. But looking back at this whole situation, it's not that Cooper was incorrect to shuffle the lines for the last handful of games of the season, and if he found something to continue down that path of taking away Tyler Johnson off of the Kucherov and Point line where they were all, more in sync and chemistry-wise more successful for the regular season. But if it doesn't work early on, then abandon the hell out of that thing. What I don't understand, largely speaking, is if you're playing 65 to 75 games with the same two other guys, and two of your three line mates, Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov, are so damn successful that they're lighting up the league, if stuff doesn't go well in game one, then you might want to go back, like, really quickly, maybe within the construct of the game, to the line that brought you to the dance in the first place, that nearly scored you 130 points in the regular season. I thought the shuffling of the lines at the end of the season was to foster plan B in the postseason if things went bad. Apparently it didn't. If I'm playing Fantasy General Manager for just a second, I do like the Cirelli, Kucherov, and Stamkos line. If you pair or if you create the trio of Braden Point, Yanni Gourde, and JT Miller. That line to me last season in the playoff stretch run, they had about three or four games together, but they were awesome, and their games perfectly complement each other. So if that's your top six, that's a badass top six. And that's the positive here moving forward is you still got a ton of badass players, but you got to find a way to not look like jerks in the postseason when you get challenged physically. And that's what we're charged with next year. But the problem is you've got a whole regular season in the way where you can't get complacent, which is kind of in our DNA and in our coach's DNA. You got to stay interested enough to get in this thing. But frankly, I don't care if we get the one seed or the eight seed next year. As long as you get in the tournament, obviously you've got a chance. And with our skill, we most certainly have a chance to go on a run. So stay interested if you can, Tampa. We'll be back again next week with some more thoughts and maybe some shuffling of roles in the front office. Obviously, we haven't heard anything as of Friday morning, April the 26th, on assistant general manager's position. If Detroit's going to fill out its staff by poaching and raiding the Tampa Bay front office, there's a lot of shuffling to be done. It's not that right now isn't important. It just feels like it's without passion. Hard place to be. So with that, have an awesome weekend. Enjoy the weather in Tampa. And if you can stomach it, watch the Stanley Cup playoffs. They're still really good. That Nashville-Colorado series is going to be awesome. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. And we'll talk next Friday for the final edition, unless there's something crazy that happens and we sign up for a one-off, of the Joe Boltz Fan Podcast for the 2018-2019 season.